Good morning. We are in week three of our series, Conflict, and today I get the privilege of speaking to you about tension in the family. My name is Pastor Brock, and if you guys don't know me this morning, a little bit about me. I am the proud husband to a beautiful wife, Melissa, who is here this morning up here, and I have two amazing little boys at home, Ori and Ashton. And I and my wife and our kids are anxiously awaiting the arrival of our third child. Yes, we love children in our family, who is due in May. And no, we don't know the sex. Yes, we will be equally excited if it's a boy or a girl. People ask us that all the time. We are really excited. So a couple things about our family. We, right now, there's two big P's going on in our family. One is Paw Patrol. Our kids love Paw Patrol. Zach talked about it a little bit this morning. They love watching it. They love playing with their Paw Patrol toys. We even went down downtown Hamilton last week. Some of you might have seen the signs, and we saw the Paw Patrol live show. It was pretty amazing. And the other P going on right now is pillows. We love pillows. Some of you are like, oh, I love pillows too. Well, it's kind of different. Okay, check this out. What we do is when I pick up the boys from school every day, we kind of have this tradition where they kind of guide me into the bedroom and they lay me down on the floor at the foot of the bed. And I love this because I'm exhausted. And they say, Dad, you lay down. And they run around the entire house and they grab pillows from the beds. They take all the pillows off the couches. My wife hates this, but takes all the pillows off everything and they pile it on top of me. And then they're like, okay, Dad, you wait there. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. I'll just lay here. And the only thing really exposed on me is my head. And they climb up onto our bed. And our oldest son, Ori, he kind of like runs off the bed and just does like a flying Superman on the pillows. And our youngest son, Ashton, if you've ever had a two-year-old at home, you know how two-year-olds count, right? So he stands at the edge of the bed as if he's like standing on a cliff. The pillows are higher than the bed. And he kind of walks to the edge and he's like, 4, 7, 9, 10, and he sometimes launches himself off if he has the courage. And this is what my boys love to do right now. They love Paw Patrol. They love pillows. That's a little bit about my family. I know some of your families out there. I don't know all of your families, but what I do know is that all of us share one thing in common. We all have conflict in our families. It's true. And it's okay. And we all fight and we all fuss. Now, there's something else I've learned very quickly, just with our family and our dynamics the last few years, is that even when you win an argument at home, you don't really win anything, right? I mean, you ever notice that? I mean, if you win an argument at work or at the restaurant or at the pub with your friends, I mean, they may congratulate you for winning the argument. You know, okay, you know, good point, you won that argument. If you win an argument in the boardroom or at the courthouse, you may get a reward for winning the argument. But when you win an argument at home, you don't win anything. I mean, you may feel good that you won the argument, but you don't really win anything, right? Because conflict at home is like conflict nowhere else. It's complicated. It's emotional. And it seems to go on and on and on. And part of the reason it's so complicated is because we all process conflict differently. So today, to start things off, I want to go over some profiles of some of us in this room. And this is kind of the different ways that we all deal with tension, how we process tension in family. So I'm going to rhyme off some personalities. And you guys, if you could, just kind of reflect. You don't have to yell it out or anything like that or put up your hand. But reflect on who maybe you are. And then we're going to get to the next point after this. Okay, so the first one is the peacemaker. I did not come up with the emojis. Zach, awesome job on the emojis. The first is the peacemaker. And the peacemaker is someone who refuses to argue. Okay, and their kind of statement is, if you're good, then I'm good. Okay, and some of us are peacemakers in the room, and it can be kind of complicated to argue or to resolve conflict with a peacemaker, because when you go to the peacemaker and ask them how they're doing, they'll say, I'm fine. If you're good, I'm good. And some of us are peacemakers. Now, the next one is the sulker. Some of us are sulkers. And I'm not going to ask you to put up your hand this morning if you're a sulker, because you won't, because you're just down, and you won't put up your hand if I asked you to this morning. And if you went up to a sulker in your family and said, everything okay? They would say, I'm fine. Even if the conflict has been resolved and you go to them and ask them how they're doing, they will say, I'm fine. Really? Because you don't seem fine. No, I'm fine. I mean, because your body language and your facial expression, no, I'm fine. That's a sulker. The next one is the stuffer. Now, the stuffer, they say the same things like, I'm fine, or whatever. But the stuffer, what they do when you go up to them, they say it in a different way. I'm fine. Are you sure? Because you just had like a crazy conflict in your family. No, I'm fine. Whatever. I'm fine. And they stuff it down as if it's they're a volcano that's ready to erupt at any time, but they don't. They just stuff it. Fine. And that's the stuffer. Now, the next one is one of my personal favorites who I have yet to really figure out how to resolve conflict with. That's my confession this morning. The next is the Jedi. Now, some of you are going to be like, that's me. No, just wait a second, all right? Because they're tricky. The Jedi know how to play mind tricks with people. And they're really, really good at it. Another word for Jedi is the passive aggressive. All right, so they're just like the first three, okay? They do not like emotionally engaging conversations. In fact, they believe that if you get angry with each other, it's actually going to make life worse. So what they do is they masquerade their emotions by sending covert signals of anger to you. All right, so they may do like a backhanded compliment at the family table. Let's say dad comes home from work one day and you know, he's got his work outfit on or his uniform, whatever. He sits down at the table and the kid's clearly upset with his dad for being late or whatever. But the kid is passive aggressive and he's a Jedi and you've given birth to a Jedi. So now you have to receive the full force from the Jedi. And the kid looks at his dad and he's like, ugh. Okay, so how do I deal with this? So the Jedi looks at his dad and says, you know, dad, you've done pretty well for yourself in life considering your education. Is that a compliment? Did my son just compliment me or did he just give me a Jedi mind trick? No, your son's upset with you. He's upset about something and wants to talk. Or the wife looks at the husband and says, dear, are you going to do the dishes tonight or is it my turn again? Oh, Jedi mind tricks. Or the daughter walks in from being at the mall all day with an outfit that she just bought. The mom doesn't like it, but mom's a Jedi. So she's sneaky. She looks at her daughter and the daughter says, what do you think, mom? And the mom looks at the daughter and says, well, if that's the look we're going for, the Jedi. They're sneaky. And then the last two are the people that enjoy direct conflict. The first is the litigator. Now, the litigators love to argue. In fact, they're the best arguers. And even now, as I say that, you guys are going to think about some people in your families that are just great arguers and they never lose. And if you were to sit a litigator down and ask them if they're wrong about anything, they would say, no, like I'm not wrong about anything. And it's not that I can't admit that I'm wrong. I'm just never wrong about anything. And even if I am wrong, I can argue to get you to think that I'm right about everything. And people in the family litigators, you're starting to realize they don't want to argue with you anymore because you just win every argument. And they don't engage you anymore. And litigators, you realize that, hey, I can win an argument at work. I can win when I'm playing sports. I can even win with a little league umpire. But when I win at home, I don't really win anything. It's complicated. And the last is the screamers. Now, the screamers love to yell. And the interesting thing about the screamers is that if you come from a family of yellers, chances are you probably won't or you probably haven't married someone that's a yeller because you want to get away from it. And you probably won't marry or be in a relationship with someone that's a litigator either because litigators, they get the emotions up too. Now, confession time, I have come partly from a family of yellers and I grew up thinking that if you yell, you get everything out on the table, you deal with the problem, and you move on. Well, when I started dating my wife many, many, many moons ago, I presented this in our first argument. Okay, so what happened was, she's in the room now. It was a lot easier during the first service, but she's here now, so it's a little harder. So what happened was during the very first argument was, I went on my little spiel, right? I had a great presentation that I wanted to tell her, and I was yelling, and I was like, here's the thing, you need to understand this. And I was going off, and I was yelling, and I was being very powerful in my words. And then I turned, and I looked at her, and she was just kind of looking at me like, what? What is that? Like, what are you doing right now? Right? Because she didn't come from a family of yellers. And for her, it was really strange what I just did. And my words and my yelling, they weighed on her, right? They crushed her because I just yelled the entire time because she isn't used to that, and that's not how she deals with conflict. Now, do you think that we resolved the conflict in that moment? No. We spent the rest of the time arguing about how we should argue, right? You shouldn't yell. Yes, I should yell. It resolves things. No, it doesn't. And we didn't resolve anything because conflict in family is messy. But there's always going to be conflict as we move forward in our families. So today, in terms of practicality, I want to introduce to you one of the most important principles that we and our families need to get our heads and our habits around. Because the thing is this, although we're all different in this room and we all process conflict differently, there's only one source of conflict in family. And today, what I want to do, in the few minutes that we have, I want to try to lure this ugly thing out of its lair. And if we can talk about it, and we can own it this morning, then we're going to see an almost immediate improvement in how we deal with conflict in our families. And if our families can get our heads and our habits around this, and I know this isn't ideal, but this is an ideal, but as Christians, we strive for the ideal. If we can get our heads and our habits around this as a Christian family, the temperature level and the tone when you have conflict in family is going to go down almost instantly. That's how powerful this principle is this morning. So to get us understanding this, we're going to call on Jesus' brother James to explain this to us today, because James wrote a letter to Christians over 2,000 years ago, and in it, he introduces us to this principle, one of the most profound principles, if not in the world, then in all of Scripture, for relationships. So James starts, before he gets to the principle, he introduces the principle with a question. And here's the question today. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Now, we don't use that word a lot, but another way to say it would be, what causes fights and arguments among you? Now, if I was brave, and I'm not really brave today, feeling a little sick, actually, if I was brave, I would say, turn to the person that you came with this morning, turn to someone in here that's your family or that you are close to in your circle, and ask them this question, what causes fights and quarrels amongst you? I wouldn't do that this morning. Do you want to know why? Because fights and quarrels would break out amongst you, okay? Because you know what would happen immediately? You would look at each other and you would say, after 5 minutes, you would say, it's you that causes fights and quarrels amongst me, or amongst us. No, it's you, right? Because instantly as humans, we go and we resort to blame. It's you. It's you. No, it's you. I mean, come on now. It's my husband. I mean, if he just worked harder. No, it's my wife. If she was better with our money. No, it's the kids. They don't understand us. No, it's my in-laws. No, it's the parents. They just don't get it. And we blame. And we blame. And you know, our fingers, we can point them in a million directions, but you know where they're always pointed? In this direction. It's them. I mean, if my kids just listened to me, there would be peace in my house. I mean, if the entire world would just sit and listen to my instructions, then there would be peace, because I know what's best, and you need to do what I think you should do. And we instantly resort to blame. You're the reason there's fights in this house. It's you. Now, I have to tell you something, and we all need to get on the same page with this morning before we move on. We all need to know this. As long as you blame others for your unhappiness, you will always be unhappy. Now, that's tough to hear this morning, but I need you to receive that and own that this morning. Listen, every time you go to someone and you personally blame them, every time you go to your friends and you got a great story, and you got valid points, but every time you go to your friends and say, it's him, it's her, it's them, do you know what you're doing? You're essentially taking your potential for happiness and you're giving it to the person you're in conflict with. And you're essentially saying, I can't be happy unless you allow me to be happy. So here, take my happiness. And you give it back to me when you want to give it back to me. Now, if I were to ask each of you in the room, how many of you would be willing to give control of your happiness to the person you're in conflict with? You would all say, no, like that's crazy. But as long as we continue in this cycle of saying, it's them, it's her, if she would quit, if he would stop, if he would start, if you, then essentially we're giving this to them and saying, listen, I can't be happy until you do something differently. and we give away our happiness. And listen, this is a little bit true at work. It's a little bit true on the sports field. It's a lot true in our families. And chances are, if you right now consider yourself unhappy, it's because there's something going on at home. And here, you take my happiness, Mom. You take my happiness, Dad. Kids, grandparents, you take my happiness, because I can't be happy until you do something differently. Now, I learned this the hard way, and I know a lot of you probably have as well. You see, I come from a family of, there's five siblings in my family. Just had to check because that number's high. There's five siblings in my family, and we have grown up being a very tight family and always doing a lot of fun stuff together. And most of my siblings now all have kids, and they all play together. And I still remember like it was yesterday, years ago, my oldest brother coming to me and saying, "Hey, listen, like, I hate to break things up here, but I'm actually going to leave my wife." And they have three kids. And I've actually been in a relationship with another woman for a while now, and we're going to go and start our own relationship. And I remember thinking in that moment, like, no. And you know what I did? I gave him my happiness, and I was like, no, you need to change. You can't do that. You need to fix this. And here, you take my happiness, and I can't be happy until you fix this, because you've just ruined everything that I wanted and that was going well. And so I gave my brother my happiness. And truth be told, I was unhappy for a long, long time. And I gave it to him. And I said, here, oldest brother, unless you change this, unless you fix this, I can't be happy. And listen, I learned through that process that blame doesn't achieve anything. The only thing blame allows you to do is give your happiness away. And I don't want this in my life anymore, and I don't want it in your life anymore. And a part of learning to prevent this from happening is for us to own and to get our heads around what James is about to teach us today. So if you guys have a Bible, I would encourage you to turn to James chapter 4. If you don't have it today, it's going to be on the screen behind us. Now, one thing I have to say about James is he's one of my favorites in the Bible, but if you know James at all, the brother of Christ, he is direct. Okay, he would probably be the litigator or maybe the yeller, I don't know, but he's very direct, and he gets right to the point. Now, why I'm saying this is because today's talk isn't easy. Okay, I know it's personal for all of us, and a lot of us don't want to hear this morning. What I would just say is, please don't be in conflict with me about this conversation this morning, okay? This is not my words. I'm not smart enough to come up with this kind of stuff. This is James, and the only way I'm able to teach this morning is because we have the authority of Scripture to back us up. So this is important that we go through this. So let's go. He starts with a question, which we've already gone through. What causes fights and quarrels amongst us? James chapter 4, verse 1. Now, when I first read this, I thought to myself, well, there can't just be one reason that we fight in the family. Like, there's got to be a million different reasons for why we fight in the family. And James says, no. He says, you think that because you don't understand the source. And that's why we can't solve our conflicts properly in families, because we don't understand the source. So he dives in. Here we go. Everyone take a deep breath. James chapter 4, verse 1. Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? James is saying essentially, don't ultimately all of your fights and conflicts and quarrels in your family come from something inside of you? And you say, no, they come from something inside of her, in my kids. I mean, you see what's coming out of my kids right now? It's them. It's them. That's the source. And James says, okay, there is a common source with all of your fights, but it's coming from something inside of you. You have a desire, and every fight you get into is because there's a desire spilling out of you onto them. There's an inner conflict going on, and it's creating conflict with the people around you. He's saying it always begins with you. Now, if we were just to pause this morning and think about the most recent conflict you're in, and maybe you're in one right now, and we were just to own this principle this morning, I mean, do you know what that would do in our families? Maybe it would change everything. It would almost instantly bring down the temperature when it comes to how we deal with conflicts. Then he goes on. You desire, but you do not have. Now, every time there's conflict, come on. Every time there's conflict, you want something. And you say, no, 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 it's not what I want. It's what I deserve. Listen, Brock, we made promises. We made vows. My kids signed contracts. I lent the money. I deserve this, Brock. It's not what I want. It's what I deserve. And listen, we're going to get to that in a second, okay? But essentially what James is saying here, his point is, listen, every time you get in a fight, it's because you want something and you don't have it. And then he goes on. So you kill. Now, we're all good people here. And when you hear that, you're like, I don't kill people. Now, check this out. James is writing to a group of Christians. He's not writing to a group of people on death row that have been found guilty of murder. And when he uses the word kill, it's a hyperbole. It's an exaggeration to prove a point. It's not meant to be taken literally. But this is 100% relevant in his day, and it's 100% relevant when it comes to our families today. What he is saying is, listen, essentially, there will be times in your life where you want something so bad that you are willing to hurt the people closest to you to get it. You kill. And listen, I've had the privilege over the years of meeting with many teens, many individuals, many couples, and I've seen so many people where the relationship between the parents and the kids are completely broken. And I've seen relationships where the kids, the teens, they run away from home and they live somewhere else and they don't want to be in a relationship with their parents anymore. And if you were to sit the parents down and ask them, you know, what happened? Why'd your kids run away from home? The kids will tell you. The parents will tell you, listen, there was something I wanted. I wanted my kids to be this person. I wanted them to go there. I wanted them to go to this school. I wanted them to live like this. I didn't want them to hang out with these friends. And the kids will tell you, there was something I wanted from my parents. I wanted them to stop doing this. I wanted them to stop doing this. It's broken. I mean, I've seen men power up in relationships with women and just belittle them so bad that they lose every ounce of self-respect and self-esteem that they have. I've seen parents shame their kids so bad that the kids don't want to be around their parents anymore. And I've seen, I don't know how many times in families, I've seen parents or kids and parents and grandparents insulting and putting each other down so bad that all self-confidence is gone. Because they want something. They want to prove something. They want to feel good about themselves. If you want it bad enough, James says, if you want it bad enough, you have the ability to destroy relationships in your family. And some of us right now are in the process of doing this, and we defend it by saying things like this. Well, I just want what's best for them. I just want my wife or my husband to reach the full of their potential. And you lie to yourself, because it's not about them. It's about you. Do you want to know why you hurt the people closest to you the most? It's because they're closest to you. The people that you've made vows to, people that you've brought into this world, you hurt them the most because they're closest to you and you want something from them. And if you want it bad enough, you're capable of destroying them. And the whole time we're arguing and fussing and running into the room and leaving sticky notes with frowny faces on their doors and saying, it's them, it's them, it's them, it's them. James is saying, no, it's you. It's you. It's you. If you want it bad enough, you're going to use your words and your actions to get it. I mean, can you imagine what would happen in our homes if we owned this morning? If we receive this and just owned it this morning? He goes on in James chapter 4, verse 2. You covet, but you cannot get what you want. So you quarrel and you fight. And here we go. Starts all over again. You cannot get what you want. So you quarrel and you fight. James, why is it I fight with my family? Why is it that they drive me crazy sometimes? James says, well, it's really because you want something and you can't get it. Now, I just want to pause for a second this morning. And if you guys know me at all, if you've heard me speak, you know I love application. And right now you're going to get uncomfortable because I just said that, but that's okay because that makes me feel good. I love application. So I'm going to do a really easy application this morning. So just listen to this part first. Imagine you guys were at the kitchen table and we actually own this morning and we actually apply this to our life. And we said something like this. You know what part of the problem is? I'm not getting what I want. So check this out. Imagine you're at the kitchen table and dad walks in and he's late and you've waited for dinner and you're upset about something. And instead, as the Jedi kid, instead of playing the Jedi card, you look at your dad and say, Dad, you know why I'm so upset? part of the problem here is because I'm not getting what I want. And imagine the dad in that moment when the tension's getting up and he turns to his son and goes, yeah, you want to know something too? I'm not getting what I want. I mean, imagine we did that. I mean, that's a game changer in families. I mean, if we just own that this morning. So here's what I want you to do. Application time. I'm going to say the first part of this, and you're going to say the second part of this. And we're going to use our fingers to actually represent where the blame should go. Okay, ready? So you know what part of the problem is. You guys? That wasn't bad. Dan, you didn't say it, so we're going to try it one more time. Okay, ready? Ready? Here we go. You know what part of the problem is. Imagine we did that with our kids, with our grandkids, when they drive us crazy. I mean, really, it's a 2-year-old's fault that you're upset? Really? He's 2 years old. Grandkids, you want to know what the problem is? Grandma's not getting what she wants right now. That's a game changer. Part of the problem is I'm not getting what I want. Now, I'm going to put a circle up there. Are we going to get the circle? Yay, the circle. First service, we had a problem with the circle. It's a great circle, guys. Now, let's say that this circle represents a conflict that you're going through in life right now. Now, if I were to ask you a question, what part of this conflict is your responsibility? What part of this conflict is on you? Now, just let that sit for a second, okay? Now, I've asked this in so many different ways to different people over the years that I've met with that are in conflict. And do you want to know primarily what they all say? I don't have a slice in the circle. There's no part of this that's on me. I mean, if I were to ask someone, you know, what part of this, guys, even like what kind of slice do we got here? Do we have a slice there? Yeah, let's say if I went to you and said, okay, how much of this slice, like how much of this conflict is you? Are you willing to admit that that's your part of the conflict? Even if it was a small, little, really, really small, do we have small? Yay, good job. Even if we have a really small part in this, are you willing to admit that you have just even a little sliver of the conflict that's on you, that's your responsibility? Most people that I've talked to over the years would say, no, it's them. It's what she did. It's what he wouldn't stop doing. It's what he wouldn't quit doing. It's him. It's him. And do you want to know why most people that I meet will say that, that they don't have a slice in the conflict? It's the same reason why today we will all struggle with this principle that James is giving us. It's because when you own a slice, you have to be nice. It's true. When you own up to the fact that, hey, I have a part in this conflict, you know what happens? You lose your leverage. You lose your argument. And that's okay because you're not going to win the argument in the family anyways. You lose your control to win your point. And when you have to look at you and when you say, okay, maybe I do have even a little slice, you know what happens? Now you have to focus on what you've brought to this. And now you're not so empowered. You can't go to the other person all empowered now and say, you've done this and you've done this wrong and you need to stop doing this and you. Now you're like, oh, I've got a piece in this. Now I got to focus on me. And well, I don't feel so empowered now when I have to focus on me. And James says, that's my point. When you lose your leverage, you don't fight as much anymore. You don't argue as much anymore. Do you know, Andy Stanley says, do you want to know what the best defense is when it comes to family? The best defense is no defense when it comes to family. Part of the problem here is I'm not getting what I want. Now, I know some of us in this room are going to say, objection. Like, Brock, just stop, because this is way too hard to hear, because I've gone through a lot and there's been some intense conflict in my life. Now, I get it. And some of you guys are going to say, Brock, again, it's not what I deserve. It's what I want. And we made vows. He promised me. She promised me. He said he would quit. You know, my kids, I lent them money and they didn't give it back to me. And it's not what it's this. And I get it. But isn't it really the same thing? I want him to be faithful to his promises. I want my kids to fulfill that contract I made them sign. I want this from this person. And you say, but it's not fair. I know. But we have to be careful with the fair card, because we only play the fair card when it benefits us, right? I mean, picture this. How many of you guys, during the Christmas season, you go to the mall and you're looking for a parking spot? Now, there's only one spot in the mall, one parking spot in the parking lot that you can get into. And there's another guy that's been there for 15 minutes patrolling the parking lot looking for a spot. You get off the highway and you come right in and get that spot before that guy gets there. Okay, now how many of you in that moment where the guy's been there 15 minutes looking and you get there first and pull in, how many of you in that moment would bang on your steering wheel and say, it's not fair that I got this first. It's not fair that he's been here 15 minutes and I got here first and snuck right in. And it's not fair. You would never do that. If you're a Christian, you'd probably say something like this. God, thank you so much for providing for me in this moment. Right? We only use the fair card when it benefits us. And hey, listen, if you're a Christian in the room, fair ended in the garden. Right? We only use the fair card when it benefits us. Now, even in the most extreme, difficult circumstances, James is saying, part of the problem is you're so angry because there's something you want and you're not getting it. Even if your friends think you're justified, even if they really have broken promises, even if they're not the person you thought they were, part of the problem is there's something you want and you aren't getting it. Now, this is powerful. Let me tell you personally, this is powerful. When you can own this. Because you know what happens? It transforms everything. Because now, when you're willing to admit that you have a little piece, that little piece gets a little bigger. And instead of looking at them and pointing at them and blaming them, you start looking at yourself. And you start focusing on fixing yourself. Now, James doesn't end there. He goes on in James chapter 4, verse 2. He says, you do not have because you do not ask God. Those things you want, I want them to do this. I want this. James is saying the reason you don't get it is because you don't ask God. Now, if you're not a Christian in the room today, if you're just checking us out, if you're not sure about all this, we are just so glad you're here. And really, everything that we have said up to this point, it works, it's powerful, it's true. You should go home and try it. Tell your families it was your idea, they'll love you. Go home and do it. Now, if you're a Christian in the room today, if you believe in God, this next part is for you. He's saying the reason you don't have is because we don't go to God for these things. In other words, James is saying, let's get real for a second, Christians. Before you march down the hall and rip the blankets off your kid's bed and start yelling at them about what they need to do or what you think they should do, before you leave a sticky note, you know, on the windshield of your husband's car and tell them how much you love him in a negative way, you know, all these kind of things, before you play the Jedi mind tricks, before you do all this stuff, James says, has it ever occurred to you to stop and to go to God in prayer? Not just a 30-second prayer before you open the door and yell at your kids, but you actually pause. And you say, you know what, God, right now, I want my husband to get a better job. I want my son to get better friends. I want my daughter to stop dating that sketchy guy. I know you created him and all, but maybe you weren't paying attention. I don't know. God, this is what I want. And before I go and argue with that person, God, I need you to really understand what it is I want. And I had to really focus on me and my part in this before I go and start yelling at them about something. And when we hear this, we say, no. When I pray, I usually say, God, do this in them. Do this in them. Change that in them. Help my son see that those friends aren't good. Help my husband see that his job isn't the greatest. Now, I need you to hear this, and it's really, really important that you hear this morning. James is saying, has it ever occurred to you that the reason you're not getting what you want is because they, the people you love, they don't have it in them to give you in the first place? The reason you don't have is because you don't ask God. And some people I know do this really well. Before they get in conflict, before they get so upset with that person and try to squeeze whatever it is they want out of that person, they go to God and they say, God, listen, I got a slice in this. And there's something that I want in this conflict. And God, you need to hear my slice. And God, I'm going to start focusing on this slice, which is actually bigger than I actually think it is. And the conversation goes so much better, because when you start talking to that person, the conversation goes something like this. Hey, listen, you know, I'm pretty upset about something right now. But I'm beginning to understand that part of the problem here is I'm not getting what I want. And as a Christian, I'm starting to believe that maybe I'm not getting what I want because you don't have it in you to give me that in the first place. And as a Christian, I need to go to God for those things. I mean, it's a game changer. I mean, it changes everything. He ends with this today. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. James is saying this, Christ followers, if you would take a deep breath before you run in and start arguing with someone and allow God in that time of prayer, not just a 30-second prayer, but really just pausing in your life and really allowing God to grapple with you about what it is you want and what it is you expect from that person. If you were allow him to grapple with you about that and then be willing to understand as people of faith and trust that God has what's best for us, if we're willing to trust him that, hey, there's times where he is going to say no, because when he, if he were to give us what we wanted, it would actually do more harm than good. So if we as Christians were willing to trust that he had what's best for us and he's going to say no to us, and we're honest about what it is we want and what we're expecting, then we start to realize, hey, maybe in this moment, I'm beginning to understand the only person that can give me this is God. And these people that I'm arguing with, they don't have it in them to give me that in the first place. So my question today is this. Have you taken your conflict to God? Can you take no for an answer? Are you willing to admit that maybe you have a part in the conflict? Are you willing to start the conversation in a different place? And don't start the conversation handing them the responsibility of making you happy, the pressure of making you happy. You don't receive because you don't ask God. Now, here's the question I'm going to end with today. Who is suffering in your family because you aren't getting your way? Who in your family feels the pressure to change, to behave, to start, to stop, to quit, to work harder, to get skinnier, to work out more? I mean, who have you communicated to in your family that you can't be happy unless they do this? Who's suffering in your family right now? And what can you do today to text them, to email them, to call them on the phone, to ask them to go to coffee and have a conversation? What can you do today to take that pressure off of those people that you love? Hey, do you want to know why you fight with your family? Because there's something you want, and you're not getting it. And do you want to know why they fight back? It's because there's something they want, and they're not getting it. Now, in an ideal world, in a family where you are seeking after God and wanting a relationship with Christ, there's always a pause before the storm, before the conflict. There's a come to Jesus moment where you go to God and say, God, listen, before I confront this person, and hey, there needs to be confrontation and there are issues that need to be dealt with, but before that, God, I need you to really do a work in my heart and realize that there are things that I want and that I expect from them. God, do in me what you need to do in me before I go to them and try to squeeze out of them what only you can give me in the first place. Do you know what the source of our fighting is? There's something you want, and you're not getting it. Now, imagine we own that this morning. Imagine we own that this morning, and we took that to God. And imagine as families, people who really care about family on Family Day weekend, imagine we own this. And we now made this a habit in our families, in our Christian homes. Every time the tension starts to rise, imagine we own this. Hey, you want to know what part of the problem is? I'm not getting what I want. Let's pray. Father, we do not like this passage, if we can be honest with you this morning. God, we're going to wrestle with this, and some of us this morning, we're going to be in such conflict with these words. But God, I pray, first, I thank you for this truth, and I thank you for the reminder, God, of looking inward, God, of realizing that with all of us, there are things that we selfishly crave, God, that we try and go to the people that we love the most. And God, sometimes we hurt them, God, because we want something so badly for ourselves. God, as people that love you, as people that put our faith and our hope in you, God, would you remind us as we wake up every day, God, our greatest and only true satisfaction comes in you and your love for us. And God, we need to stop going to those people that we love so much and trying to take it from them. Something only you can give us. God, let us be so full of your love, so satisfied with your love for us, that is enough. And instead of going and wrestling with other people and trying to take things from them that they can't give us, let us be people that are satisfied with how much you love us, and let that be enough. And then with the rest of our days here on this earth, let us truly find joy and happiness in just being in relationship with our family and encouraging our family and sharing that love with others in our family. God, we love you, and we want to sing one more song to you. In Jesus' name.